Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 15th of December. Monday at 9 is All Things Political, and we'll have two guests with very different perspectives on today's program. Philip Klein joining us momentarily, reporter for the American Spectator. Arianna Huffington will join us the second part of this hour, creator of the Huffington Post and author of Right is Wrong, How the Lunatic Fringe Hijacked America, Shredded the Constitution, and Made Us All Less Safe. We have a lot to talk about this hour. We'll look at the Bush legacy and his trip, an eventful trip it was, to Iraq, where an Iraqi television journalist hurled two shoes at President Bush on Sunday during a joint news conference. And the appearance by the president has created some demonstrations in Iraq. We will discuss that. Our guest the first half hour said that while it's been important to keep a ledger of the good, the bad, and the ugly aspects of the Bush years, it's now time for the discussion to move a step further. He also has written extensively on the Blagojevich problem, which is an understatement, in Illinois. We'll be talking about that and what the Obama administration needs to say about this, what they need to make clear. So all of that's coming up, and you are welcome to join our conversation, as always. The number here is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you'd like to send an email, you can do that at talk@wpr.org. Philip Klein, reporter for the American Spectator, our first guest this morning. Hello, Philip. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Let's start with the Bush administration for a moment. They had a fairly dramatic Sunday in Baghdad, and you say that it's important for us to keep a ledger of the good, the bad, and the ugly aspects of the Bush years. Let's talk about those. What are the good, the bad, and the ugly aspects that we'll remember from the last 8 years?
Well, I mean, it depends, what the perspective is. I think that the clearest part of the Bush legacy will be that once terrorists struck on September 11th, there was a drastic change in American policy regarding terrorism. Up until then, terrorism was viewed as a sort of manageable threat, one among many in the world, and often something that could be treated like a global law enforcement issue. And what happened after September 11th is that the Bush administration made the decision to view it more in terms of a war, and a global war, and made the decision to be aggressive in fighting terrorism overseas. And so I think that we won't really know until we have some context in history in terms of how that panned out. And I mean, one thing that we do know, for instance, is that there hasn't been another major attack on U.S. soil since the September 11th attack. Now, some would argue that Bush doesn't deserve credit on it, but maybe that suggests that the terrorist threat is exaggerated somehow, whereas over time, with the understanding of history, it may turn out that, in fact, a lot of the actions that Bush took, which we criticize now in the moment, turned out to actually help protect America.
Mm-hmm. What did you make of the event in Baghdad yesterday with the shoes being thrown at him, how he handled that, and the demonstrations that ensued?
Well, I mean, I think that it's obviously a pretty bizarre incident.
Yeah, it was.
So obviously, I mean, just for the pure news value, I mean, it was surely not something that you see every day. I mean, certainly, I guess you give Bush credit for one thing. He did a good job ducking the shoe
and showing
quick reflexes. you start to think, I wonder if I were speaking, someone hurled the shoe at me, if I'd be as quick on my feet. Clearly it reflects, a resentment among, some Iraqis about the American actions in Iraq. Certainly, I mean, it's a very unpopular war here, and certainly, you know, among a lot of Iraqis, it was, you know, it was unpopular, and you know, the frustration with U.S. presence. Now, my understanding of the person that threw the shoe was supportive of the Sunnis who had been fighting the U.S. I think that, I think that the one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, after a lot of mistakes in Iraq, I think that clearly, once Bush changed the strategy, which is something that I think should have been done a lot sooner, but nonetheless was eventually done, that things began to turn around in Iraq. And I think that, they're in a lot better shape now than they would have been 2 years ago. And I think that one of the historical ironies may be that, now with the status of forces agreement, the U.S. is actually on course to start withdrawing troops and maybe be, you know, mostly or entirely out of there in a few years. And this was all put in place by the Bush administration, and this was all made a lot easier by the surge strategy. So, but all of it will happen during the time of the Obama administration. And ironically, it could quite possibly, you know, could quite turn out that the surge strategy that was put in place during the Bush administration, which Obama imposed, made it possible for Obama to responsibly withdraw U.S. troops.
Let's talk about Blagojevich for a moment. That story will certainly progress this week. You have written that if Barack Obama did not talk to Governor Blagojevich himself, there were likely intermediaries between him and the governor, perhaps even Rahm Emanuel. The public has a right to know what was discussed in these conversations and how much knowledge Obama himself had about them. Are you concerned about this?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that we don't know. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to jump to conclusions about who do what or try to say that there's a broader conspiracy. The prosecutor made clear that, Barack Obama is not, accused of anything in the indictment or any, it doesn't implicate him. But I think that in the interest of full transparency, I think that Barack Obama should be pretty clear. It now seems that, you know, there's a report, I believe it was in the Chicago Tribune, that Rahm Emanuel had, in fact, been in touch with Blagojevich. So I'd like to know, was Rahm Emanuel somehow in on these discussions where there was some sort of horse trading? Blagojevich on the tape clearly, didn't have kind words to say.
No, he sure didn't. Right.
But I think that, I'd still be curious in terms of, did Rahm Emanuel know that all this stuff was going about? And did he communicate this to Obama? There was an early rumor that somehow he was the one who tipped off prosecutors, which subsequently was denied. But I think that it's in the interest, not just the American public's right to know, but it's, I would imagine, it should be in the interest of the Obama transition team to want to just clear everything, because traditionally what happens whenever there's any sort of political scandal is that politicians get themselves into problems when they get into a bunker mode, and it makes people suspicious. I think if Obama and Emanuel, answer all sorts of questions about their relationships, their dealings with Blagojevich, and it turns out, which is probably, that there's, absolutely nothing there, then they'd be better served by just clearing the air on that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's in the best interest of Illinois for Blagojevich to resign today, if not sooner?
I think clearly it is, and I mean, rather than to drag this on forever, I mean, it's kind of quite a testament to him that he hasn't resigned yet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, you have to wonder what sort of, you know, going on in his mind. I mean, based on the person who was on the phone and those phone calls, I mean, I guess in some sense it doesn't surprise you that he wouldn't resign if he was sort of brazen enough to say the sort of things he did on those calls. I've heard it suggested by some people that maybe in his mind he thinks that he's done nothing wrong, that this is sort of the way things are in Illinois. This is pretty typical, and that he was just talking, so you know, why should he have to resign?
What do you make of the Obama appointments, the many appointments that have been announced so far? Is he bringing a strong team with him, Philip? Do you have any concerns?
Well, it depends on, you know, how you define the team. You know, certainly the at least the broad narrative is saying that he's bringing experienced people from the Clinton administration and people who are at least more centrist, you know, rather than from the sort of progressive wing of the Democratic Party. I think that a lot will depend on, you know, also a lot of the undersecretaries and the staff who, you know, are appointed under all these people. If you go through some of the more the prominent appointments, I think that the Hillary Clinton appointment was particularly surprising to me. It was surprising because it doesn't seem like, you know, Hillary Clinton, if you were thinking of, well, who's the, you know, really experienced person on international affairs, you wouldn't necessarily think it's Hillary Clinton. Not that she doesn't have any experience in national affairs, but international affairs, but it's not, you know, this is someone who during the campaign, Barack Obama specifically talked about how she exaggerated her trip, you know, her sort of international experience. You know, there's a famous comment about having teas with overseas people, which, you know, he tried to dismiss as sort of, well, campaign talk and so forth, but it was at the root of a broader argument he was trying to make that, you know, she had sort of exaggerated her experience in that arena. Furthermore, what was puzzling to me is that most of the arguments that Obama had with Hillary Clinton during the campaign were in the foreign policy arena, and it wasn't just a matter of small differences on such and such issue. His whole point was that Hillary Clinton was representative of conventional Washington thinking on foreign policy, and that when we go move on from the Bush administration, it's not enough to merely go from a Republican to a Democratic administration, that we needed fundamental change to sort of uproot this sort of Washington consensus that dominates our foreign policy, and we need fresh thinking. So for me, it was quite surprising that he turned to Hillary Clinton.
Philip Klein is our guest this half hour, reporter for the American Spectator. It's all things political, and we're welcoming phone calls for him later for Arianna Huffington. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and we would also take your email. And that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now for Philip Klein, and let's start with Mike from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. You know what? If George Bush was able to run again, I think I could have voted for him. You know, forget having a beer with this guy. This is the guy you want on your dodgeball team. I saw that footage.
It was amazing, wasn't it? Yeah.
When that shoe went toward him, that guy also was a very good shot. It was right at his head. And Bush, man, I think that's great late night talk show material coming up. So, but to get to the topic I wanted to talk to about is two things. It was about 8 years from 1993 until 2001 that Clinton kept us safe. And so Clinton has managed to keep us safe longer than George Bush so far. So I don't know that it has as much to do with what airport security is and so on and so forth, but I think it just takes a lot of planning for a group like that to accomplish something like that. Now, the security measures might have something to do with it. But the other thing, too, is this big fiction about the troop surge being successful. I talked to an officer who happens to be a Republican. He was talking about Iraq, and he said that the surge didn't have that much to do with it. It had to do more with the fact that the Sunnis and the Shi'i had managed to ethnically cleanse each other from their respective neighborhoods, and also that the army or the U.S. government went in there with bags full of money, trucks full of money, and paid Sunnis to go after al-Qaeda instead of after U.S. troops. So I don't know how much the presence of 20 or 30,000 additional troops had to do with it, from what I understand.
All right, I need to hold you there, Mac. We have a lot of callers. Thanks. Philip, your response.
Again, well, 2 points. First of all, I don't think it's clear that Bill Clinton kept us safe for 8 years. In fact, al-Qaeda grew from a small terrorist group into a global terrorist organization under Bill Clinton. When he came in, he faced the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. He didn't treat it as something that was a sign that there was a global threat. He treated it as a global law enforcement issue where you had to track down the perpetrators of that. And you had the bombing on the USS Cole. You had the embassy bombing, and then you had 9/11. And so 8 months after he left, Al Qaeda had been built up during his time. So I don't think it's clear to say that Clinton kept us safe. On the second point, I mean, clearly that's one interpretation of people who don't want to give credit to the surge. What we do know is, in conjunction with the implementation of a new strategy, violence went down, and we saw a dramatic improvement in stability and in the capability of the Iraqi forces. So, I mean, we don't have that much time, but I could cite a lot of people and experts who would, and statistics that would give the opposite view of him, and I know that some people who are skeptical of the surge make the argument that he did.
Thank you, Mike, for your call. John from Madison is next. Hi, John.
Good morning, guys.
Hi.
Question with respect to the trajectory of the Republican Party at this point. Do you see it? I'm kind of a hardcore moderate David Brooksian type, and I'm just curious if the Republican Party, the conservative wing, is going to kind of double down and say, look, we lost it because we lost the values and the cultural issues, or whether they will moderate. Certainly Huckabee, I think, like Obama, puts a kinder, gentler face on the policies that espoused by others may seem more extreme. I'm just curious as to where you think the Republican Party is going. I think they've put themselves in a heck of a pickle by focusing almost solely on the values and the foreign policy, both of which they're not really working for them right now. So I'm just curious as to where you think they're headed.
Thank you, John.
Okay, well, what I would say is that, first I would say, and I make this point all the time, that we have to be careful to, I think there's a tendency to sort of extrapolate too much from one election or one defeat, or even if this was on top of 2006. I mean, we could have been having this conversation 4 years ago, and the question would have been, how come Democrats can't win elections? And it was about how Bush, through using national security and appealing to values voters was able to win re-election. So I don't think that ideologically, you know, Americans somehow sweepingly changed that much in the time period. What happened was that Republicans were put in power, and they didn't do a good job, and they weren't popular. So the country threw them out, and they were a lot more open to the Democratic view and to the idea of change, and we need to try something different. So what I would say is that I don't think that Americans are necessarily as ideological as we think. I think that you could win elections on, you know, a different combination, you know, different people. I think it depends on the circumstances. Again, in 94, Republicans swept in and Newt Gingrich took over. And in 1996, Bill Clinton won re-election. So I think that that, you know, was America ready for small government in 94 and suddenly not ready for it 2 years later? I think that the thing that Republicans need to do is I definitely think that on the economic issues, I think that it's important for them to return to smaller government. I know that within the conservative community, there's a debate among some people who say that, you know, small government, that's sort of a losing issue for Republicans, that we somehow need to return to, you know, accepting government and try to figure out a way to make it better. In my view, that's a losing argument, because if people want bigger government, they're going to vote for Democrats. And I think that it's important that these people do make a good, valid point that the sort of issues that Republicans ran on in the Reagan's victory in 1980, you know, like tax cuts or something, are no longer as salient an issue. Mm-hmm. When Reagan took over, the top marginal tax rate was 70%.
We're in a whole different era when it comes to the size of government, considering what's going on in the country, right? I mean, the financial market is broken. The car industry is broken. Everything's broken. The infrastructure is broken. And who's stepping in? Most people would agree that it's the government's turn to fix what ails us.
Well, at this very moment. But, I mean, I think that, you know, like I said, it totally depends. I think that in, you know, in the early 70s, you know, Richard Nixon famously proclaimed, "We're all Keynesians now." And by the end of the decade, Ronald Reagan swept into power, saying that government needed a diet. So, yeah, I'd say that right now, big government is on the march. And, you know, one thing that I didn't point out to was, was the appointment of Tom Daschle. And I think there's clearly going to be a move on healthcare to try to, establish universal healthcare. So right now, I think this is definitely a moment of big government. However, the way I see it is that government was all over causing the crisis in the first place. You had the Federal Reserve, which kept interest rates very low for way too long after the housing bubble continued to inflate. You had the Fannie and Freddie, which, because they benefited from the implicit government backing, were able to get access to really cheap money, and they were able to throw all that money out and basically spread the risk around, so that a lot of these companies were able to loan money to people who couldn't afford houses. So you had initiatives by government to want to try to get people to get more people to be able to own houses. So I think that the Community Reinvestment Act and so forth. So I think that government's fingerprints are all over this crisis, and it would be a huge mistake to say that, well, now that there's a problem, what we have to do is have more government, because what happened during the Depression was that just as now the government caused the Depression through its trade policies, through the fact that the Federal Reserve contracted the money supply dramatically, leading in the early stage of the contraction, and then Roosevelt came in and he started all the same project type of thing that Barack Obama wants to do, and we didn't get out of it until the World War II. And a lot of people say, well, you know, it took World War II to get us out of the Depression. Well, why did it take World War II to get us out of the Depression if FDR's policies were somehow so successful? I mean, that's not how I define success, that in 1937, you know, 4 years after he gets into office, you still have unemployment, you know, in the mid-teens.
Well, there are those who say it didn't go far enough. Am I getting you right, though, that you would say that Obama's stated course to rebuild the infrastructure, to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to put people back to work, is not the way to go?
Absolutely not. The way to go, in my view, is, you know, not the politically popular way, which is that I think that the more the government stays out, the quicker the quicker it'll rebound. However, it's not politically popular, because obviously people want to see and feel like the government's doing something for psychological reasons. Economically speaking, that's a much better thing to do. I think that, you know, there are many ways that you could, you know, help working people. I think one thing is that you can cut the payroll tax, which, you know, affects a lot more people than just, you know, the income tax, because a lot of people don't pay the income tax. I think that, you know, if you cut corporate tax rates, I think that would be helpful in terms of companies moving jobs overseas, because U.S. corporate tax rates aren't really competitive. So I think that there are things that you could do that would be helpful without having to do massive government spending. I think that it's inefficient for government to decide where to spend money and to employ people. And I also think that you have a different type of labor force now than you did during the Depression. Someone, it's not necessarily transferable for someone who, say, you know, lost an office job to say that they're going to be involved in some bridge building project.
Thank you so much for joining us, Philip.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Sure. Philip Klein, reporter for the American Spectator, our guest, the first part of All Things Political, and Arianna Huffington will be joining us momentarily. She is the creator of the Huffington Post, of course, and author of the recently published The Huffington Post Complete Guide to Blogging, and also author of Right is Wrong, How the Lunatic Fringe Hijacked America, Shredded the Constitution, and Made Us All Less Safe. Our phone number is the same, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, that is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. The second hour of our program today, 150 years ago, British naturalist Alfred Russel Wallace wrote an essay describing some of his ideas on the origin of new species and the survival of the fittest species in an environment. He knew that Charles Darwin had been kicking around some similar ideas, and Wallace sent him a copy so the two might compare notes. Darwin, who had formed identical conclusions to Wallace's, asked a close friend for advice on how to deal with the similar theories, and it was suggested that Darwin and Wallace's findings be presented together at the annual meeting of society that was held in London. We'll talk about Alfred Russel Wallace and his phenomenal life, very poor upbringing, traveled on his own collecting species, and now we hardly remember who this man is. Well, we will remember who he is the second hour of our program today. And so we will wait for the call for Arianna Huffington, which is coming in a moment. In the meantime, I'll just take a few of your phone calls for all things political and those of you who are on hold. And we expect that she will be with us. We hope she'll be with us in a moment. Ray from Milwaukee. No Arianna yet, but we got you, Ray.
Well, maybe you could ask her for me.
Sure.
What she thought of the shoe-throwing incident. I found the man to be heroic, and in Iraq this morning on the BBC, they said that gentleman is seen as a hero there, and it's the talk of the town in Iraq. And, you know, that's a beautiful metaphor for Bush's relationship with that country, that on his way out, he receives the most heavy insult. And I'd also like to ask Arianna what she thought of the appointment of Hillary Clinton to any post at all, because I thought she had disqualified herself during the race, the run-up to the nomination, where it looked like for sure she was out of it completely, and a reporter said, well, why should you stay in the race? And it was in June. And this was Hillary's quote, well, Bobby Kennedy was shot in July, so what did she mean by that statement?
So are you willing to give her a chance? Do you think she might be better than you thought?
No, she was for the war. She's just part of this whole old scene, the good old boys network. She just happens to be a good old girl. And Barack really has disappointed me with about 99% of his appointments. I really thought he was going to bring in some fresh faces, and all he's done is turn the revolving door back on.
And who's not there you would like to have there?
Oh, I can't. Jim Hightower, I mean, there's a million other people in this country that are so far more qualified than the people he's appointing. He's just appointing these old Clinton buddies, and it's sad. It's actually a sad day. I voted for Barack. I was very happy to see him win, but since that time, he's done nothing but disappoint me personally.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I hope he changes when he gets in, though. Let's see what happens.
All right, Ray. Thanks very much for the call. It's All Things Political. Arianna Huffington will be joining us momentarily. She's finishing up another interview, so we'll be with her momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn. All Things Political is what you're listening to on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're expecting a call from Arianna Huffington to join us the second part of All Things Political, and that should come momentarily, so we'll just stay tuned here. Our phone number, though, and you can just continue with your phone calls, whatever you'd like to talk about. If you want to look at the other big news, certainly it tapered off over the weekend, and I wonder why that was the case. We can look at the Blagojevich story as well, and whether or not you expect the Obama administration to have problems with this, if you'd like for them to be more forthcoming about who had conversations with the governor from the staff, or if you think that too much is being made of that story, we certainly will take phone calls on that as well. I believe that she is calling in at the moment, and so we will just wait and take more of your phone calls for Arianna Huffington in just one moment. Couple lines are open for All Things Political at this very moment, so just call in now if you know what you want to say, and we'll be with you momentarily. The sooner you call in, the better, because then we can get you on hold and get your calls to her momentarily. We also have a couple emails that we will go to, and if you'd like to send an email, that address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, for you to join our conversation and discuss whatever you'd like when it comes to politics. We do this every Monday at 9 o'clock and have for quite some time, so we certainly welcome your phone calls and your emails. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. The second hour of our program today, we'll be talking about evolution. And I do want to remind you, this is a wonderful book. It's so well written. Tomorrow, during the 10 o'clock hour, John Meacham will be joining us, editor of Newsweek, who's written a fascinating biography of Andrew Jackson in the White House titled American Lion. So we'll be talking about John Meacham's new book, American Lion. He's also the author, best-selling author of Franklin and Winston. We last spoke with him about that book, I think. So he'll be joining us tomorrow during the 10 o'clock hour to talk about Andrew Jackson. I mean, it's a bit of trivia, but you can use it at some point. The guy was 6'1" and weighed, if you can believe this, 140 pounds. He weighed 140 pounds and had a fascinating life, very difficult life, very, very hard, and covers such important periods in American history. So he will be with us tomorrow during our 10 o'clock hour. So we're hoping for her to be with us. And in the meantime, I'm just going to go to phone calls here. I don't know where the heck she is. Pat from Milwaukee. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Good morning. I was just want to comment on the gentleman that just was on your show. How people always blame the powerless minority that was, you know, was lured into buying those horrific mortgages, and then created this frenzy of selling and reselling the bad mortgages. You know, I'm not sure how the money was made on that end, but these people were like, if you use a cliche of example of drug users that, you know, were given this euphoria mortgage deal, and then the very alert and wide, you know, capable mortgage lenders knew that when a mortgage goes up 2, 3, 4, 5 points in a few years, it's going to blow up for even the most able, you know, person in our society. So I always find it so hard to believe that the I'd like to see the media, you know, make a little more hay out of not continually to keep people alert that it was the lenders that, you know, would give a mortgage away that would go from 6% to 11%.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the it isn't solely and by no means even a partial, you know, equitable share of blame. I would say it was more or less the mortgage loaner that lent these criminal type of loans out to these poor people.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of all that's on the plate for the president-elect?
He's got, you know, he's gonna have to if he does a good job, I think we're gonna see great changes. I think we need someone like him that's very intelligent, very even-keeled. I've explained to my friends he's a man that's been annealed through his life. He's fought the battles, and he realizes now which battles are worth putting his energy into. I think he's going to pinpoint the right things to work on, and if we give him time, we have a gentleman that's incredible, and he's pulling together a great cabinet that has gotten a lot of kudos from even Republican senators. So I think we, what else could we see except progress, I think, with this kind of a setup?
Yeah, it's a lot on the plate, isn't it, Pat?
Yeah, it really is.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
And Arianna Huffington is joining us now. Her latest book is The Huffington Post Complete Guide to Blogging, and she's also author of Right is Wrong, How the Lunatic Fringe Hijacked America, Shredded the Constitution, and Made Us All Less Safe. Arianna, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hello. Great to be with you.
First, congratulations on a wonderful website. You guys are good. You even updated over the weekend, which is fabulous. For those of us who are news junkies and want our news and new news, there you are. It's good. It's a great site.
Oh, yes, we have editors 24/7 updating.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can go on the site, and not just about politics, but any subject, entertainment, living style. You can have the latest news and the latest opinion in the form of blogs.
Right. Yes, and many blogs. You have a lot of blogs.
Well, we have 2,500 bloggers who have their own password. Ooh. And can blog whenever they want. And then we get people who send us the occasional blog, or we ask people, like, if you have something you want to write about or something happened that you feel strongly about, you can send us a blog.
Right. And they're usually timely blogs. You've had a lot of them on Blagojevich, including one recent one by you that maybe there are so many other issues on the plate. This one is something that the media has grabbed onto, and maybe we've gone overboard with it?
Well, I think where we've gone overboard is in trying to link it to Obama. I think it is a major scandal. It is an incredible story, and I can understand why we are all a little obsessed with it. Not just on the political level, but as I wrote in my blog, on the personal level, I called mine Character is Destiny, because clearly there's nothing his enemies could have done that's as bad as what he did to himself. But the attempt to link it to Obama, when even Blagojevich himself said that that there was nothing the Obama people offered him except their appreciation, it's that attempt that seems completely far-fetched.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to phone calls for you, Arianna. We have a lot of people who'd like to speak with you. Jim is from Milwaukee. He has been on hold for a while. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, first off, a quick aside to the guest that I liked your Right is Wrong book, especially the MPG fraud in comparing the United States to Japan and China. The other thing that I wanted to mention is the Iraqi situation, where Bush, of course, made a joke out of it and said, I don't know what the guy said, but I saw his soul, S-O-L-E, but
yeah.
What the guy said that was really significant, he says, this is from the widows, the orphans, and those who were killed in Iraq. And, you know, we think that we can control these huge countries, Iraq the size of California and Afghanistan the size of Texas, and we also suffer this illusion, this nation of denier liars, that we can somehow kill our way into the hearts and minds of these people. And I think it's all nuts, and I just wonder what the guest thinks of it.
Well, I completely agree. I think, remember when we were told that we're going to be greeted as liberators, and with every passing month, we are more hated, and we're seen more and more as an occupying force. And so the good news is that there is now a date certain by which the American military is supposed to leave Iraq, and that's something which we all need to make sure is the day that is met, the deadline that is met.
We had an email. A lot of people have wanted to talk about this shoe incident this morning, Ariana. An email came in. My first reaction to the shoes being thrown at President Bush was that it was an embarrassment to our country's protection of the president. My husband's reaction was that the incident was an embarrassment to our country because, one, it wasn't a U.S. journalist throwing the shoes, and two, because it took this long for something like this to happen.
Yes, I can understand that. It was, if you read the history of this journalist who threw the shoe, you see that he had suffered a lot during the last few years in terms of family members being killed, he himself being held in jail. So it's really an explosion of sentiment, which here it was a shoe throwing, but of course, it's been much worse.
Mm-hmm. What is your take, Ariana? And I'm asking you, I guess, to give us a sense of all the people you have writing for Huffington Post, all the bloggers. I think that we're feeling it during the holiday time. People aren't spending very much money. People are losing jobs. It's really hitting a lot of Americans. I'm wondering where you think we're headed in 2009 and beyond. Do you think things will get substantially worse?
I'm afraid things are going to get worse. And we started a feature on the Huffington Post that we are calling Blogging the Meltdown.
Mm.
And we're asking people to send us their stories or stories of friends. And the reason for blogging the meltdown is because what we are finding is that when you blog about something, it's very therapeutic. It's like keeping a diary.
Uh-huh.
The worst thing that happens during a meltdown like this, on top, of course, of the economic hardships, is the sense of isolation, of shame, of guilt, even if somebody is not responsible for what is happening to them. And writing about it, immediately having comments around what you are writing, creating a community around it, can counter some of these isolation tendencies.
Thank you, Jim, so much for your call. Let's go to Arlene from Milwaukee. Hi, Arlene.
Hi. May I first say that I appreciate Mariana Huffington. Every time I hear that she's going to be on anything on television, I'm sure to turn in that program.
Thank you.
Of her very, very intelligent wit and being able to speak and tell the story. But first of all, I'm not a real Obama supporter. I did support him because I do like him, but I don't think he's progressive enough. But it is just so wonderful to have a president with a brain and to listen to somebody speak and not put two words together and make you want to cringe. And I believe that anybody that is protesting what this president has done for the last 8 years and now is going to leave us with and is in Washington, they should throw shoes over that fence toward the White House in just thousands and thousands and maybe millions of shoes should hit that White House lawn to show our protest and how we feel about this president and what he's done to us.
Thank you, Arlene, for your call. Ariana?
Well, I can understand the incredible feeling of outrage at what has been done over the last over the Bush years. And I would suggest if people want to send shoes to the White House, to just mail them. That would be that would indicate the protest without running the danger of hurting anybody. But I think the point is, remains that the country has suffered tremendously, and it will take a long time to recover.
Let's talk about Obama for a moment. We've had a few people call this morning, and there's an undercurrent of this, which you well know. Concerns from progressives in this country that the new president seems to be beginning from the centrist rather than the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. Is that of concern to you?
Actually, I see it differently. I see that what has happened in American politics, that the center has shifted. And what used to be left-wing positions, you know, on health care, on bringing the troops home from Iraq, on global warming, on corporate responsibility, are now solidly mainstream positions. And therefore, Barack Obama represents that new center. And the country has shifted to that new center. And I think there's plenty of time for people to be disappointed once he starts acting. I think it is premature to be disappointed now. And I think that we sort of owe it to the new administration to wait for them to be, at least to take office before we start being expressing our disappointment.
Thank you, Arlene, for your call. Marion from Richmond Center. Hi, Marion.
Hi. If I could go back to the guest you had a little bit ago, he didn't give credit to, I think, the pilgrims that came over in the first place. He's talking about who should get credit for where we are now, helping them get rich. And my husband has a grandfather, 10 years, generations ago, came over on the Mayflower, George Soule.
Mm-hmm.
And also the people that caravaned out west and started all these towns, started the railroads. He didn't give them credit, and I think what would we done with all them people? We wouldn't be here, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And then another one about Clinton's cabinet that Obama's got. They've been there, done that, and they made some mistakes like universal health care. And what mistakes they did make, this, if they would have brought new people in, they would have made mistakes all over again. And not saying that Obama's people might make some. I mean, everybody's bound to make a mistake here and there.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about health care, Ariana. Is this new administration going to be taking on this huge issue that will cost the country some money? This is another one. In addition to losing jobs, people are losing benefits, and you can lose everything if you have a major crisis and you don't have insurance. Do you expect that from Obama?
Absolutely. And I think that what we're seeing now is that it's actually costing the country a lot of money and not having insurance because we end up using the emergency system, which is much more expensive as a kind of primary care physician in many instances. And, of course, if people don't get preventive care, they end up getting much more sick and needing very expensive surgery. So doing something about health care is definitely one of the highest priorities of the administration and of the country.
Thank you so much, Marion, for your call. And we go to Ben from Twin Lakes. Hi, Ben. Ben, are you there? Ben is gone. That's probably all the time we'll have for phone calls anyhow. Ariana, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate your time today, and thanks for all of your – you are a worker, aren't you? I can't believe all the things you do. You do so many things.
Oh, well, I'm very blessed that in that I love what I'm doing.
Well, that's good. That's a very good thing. Thank you. Ariana Huffington, creator of the Huffington Post, and her latest book we were talking about politics and didn't have a chance to talk fully about her new book, but it's the Huffington Post Complete Guide to Blogging with advice from all kinds of people, Erica Jong and Steve Weber, Nora Ephron, Jamie Lee Curtis, Gary Hart. It's by the editors of the Washington Post with an introduction by Ariana Huffington, and she's the author of that. And before that, she's quite prolific these days. Right is Wrong, How the Lunatic Fringe Hijacked America, Shredded the Constitution, and Made Us All Less Safe. So we thank Rhonda Fanning and Rob Schroeder for producing this hour, and thanks to Rob for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. All Things Political is something that you hear every Monday morning at 9 o'clock. And not that we don't talk politics other days of the week, because we certainly do, but every Monday at 9 we talk about – specifically it's reserved for what's happening in terms of politics, and there's a lot going on this week, which of course we will – respond to. News is coming up in just a moment from National Public Radio, and we will return with another hour of Monday conversation. I do want to remind you, because it's a big interview and a wonderfully written book. John Meacham will join us tomorrow during our 10 o'clock hour. He's written in a very beautiful way a book about Andrew Jackson, American Lion. John Meacham is the editor of Newsweek magazine, so we'll be looking at the presidency and the very, very hard life and fascinating life of Andrew Jackson. So that will be tomorrow during the 10 o'clock hour of our program. Thanks for all of your calls, everybody, for this hour, and thank you for listening. News is coming up, and we'll return. It's a minute now before 10 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.